Evening, Rabbi Yisai. We try, Be'ezus Hashem, to touch some of the common things which I think we need to review. Now, it's especially important to review the halachas, especially, not only, but especially in the younger years of marriage. Fellow that I know, a very erlich yid, came to me once in the summertime, knows me well, and he asked me to give him a short review of the halachas. He said, I have to tell you, Kvoda Rav, he says, in the last 10 years, I've barely observed the halachas. Why? Because in the last 10 years, my wife was either pregnant or nursing, except for a few months here and there. So I'm just not tuned in. It's been 10 years since it was a regular mitzvah. So in the earlier years of marriage, especially, we need to come back to these halachas. Now, Sam Sofer writes in the Droshes of Sam Sofer that the schusim that we need, writes, quotes the Rambam, that there'll be a large kibbutz of Jews in Eretz Yisrael before the advent of Mashiach Tzidkenu. And that's what the Novi in Yirmiyah says, V'shovu me'eretz oyev. We'll return in the lands of our enemies. Then the Novi goes on, and the Novi says, we read this Rosh Hashanah, the second day, V'shovu bonim l'gvulam. So we already said, V'shovu me'eretz oyev. What is V'shovu bonim l'gvulam? Some Sofer writes that Gvula means that we'll return to the Beis HaMikdash, that the Beis HaMikdash will be rebuilt. And he says, principally, we're going to need, in that Dora Achron, before Mashiach Tzidkenu, we're going to need two schosim. Two schosim we're going to need. The schos of Achdus, of unity, and Avos Yisrael. And Zahirus and Yoni Kedusha. That in these in Yonim, which touch the Yisoid of Kedusha, that we should act in appropriate fashion. Mora says in Chulin, any of you learned it recently in the Daf Yomi cycle, Mora says in Chulin, that there are mitzvahs which provided for kiyum ha'olam, that the world, the Rabbanu Shel Olam, has schus for the world to sustain itself. And the Gemara states two things that the Umas ha'olam observed, that they didn't sell human flesh in meat markets, and they didn't issue marriage licenses for gay marriage. What they state in the Gemara. Chisiyah about 40 years ago, the year was Tovshin Lamed Gimel, about 40 years, to learn a great deal with Rav Lezer Plachinsky, Zeichet Tzadik Livrocha. Goy Yisrael. And he offered the following take on this Gemara. He said that the world stands, that you say this in the world, stand on my sirtzach and my sinov. The admonitions against murder and immorality. Says, unfortunately, the world has trashed both in history. But each one still has a vestige of kiyum. That we don't sell human flesh in a meat market, it's still beyond the pale. There's still something that remains. The last vestige of the sanctity of the human being, of human life. Morality in the world is trashed, but there's still a little vestige of it left, that we don't license gay marriage. Look, Mayim Ranan, that this is considered progressive in our time. It's progressive. There's a lot of other things that are considered progressive, that we only have to look through the lens of history. Nazi Germany introduced euthanasia. it was considered barbaric, totally beyond the pale, forced euthanasia. In enlightened Holland, there are tens of thousands of cases every single year of enforced euthanasia. Doctors ask no one's permission. They decided a person has lived enough, and they unplug them, and they put them to death. Tens of thousands of cases every year in enlightened Holland, the place of civility. What was 70 years ago considered improperly so a mark of barbarism is day-to-day fear in civilized Holland. We lose in time. It's progressive, it's humanitarian, it's compassionate. In our Torah we call it Loisirtzach. I believe that we're holding Leis Kates. How long the Kates will take, none of us know. But Leis Kates, the rise of Klal Yisrael, Aladmas HaKadosh, the miraculous rise of Klal Yisrael. Close to half of the Jews in the world live Aladmas HaKadosh today. Kfis. Alei Dover. That's what the Sam Sefer talked about. What we're waiting is for the Veshavuvonim Legvulam. So the footsteps of Mashiach are not far behind the Veshavuvonim Eretz Oyev. Every army, when it becomes desperate, undertakes extreme measures to attempt to forestall defeat. The Satan is on the brink of defeat. With the advent of Mashiach Tzidkenu, the Olam will come to its tikkun, and the Satan will be pushed aside. So it's dafka at our time that we face the greatest challenges to Kedusha that we face in centuries or in millennia. Dafka. Sforno writes at the very end of Parshas Achrei, "Shmartim es mishmarti levilti asos michukos hatoevos." Observe the mishmeres, so that one should not do michukos hatoevos asher nasu lufnecha. The Sforno writes, "Shimru gam es hamitzvos shetzivisi l'shmir v'geder." Observe those mitzvahs which I created for you as a shmir, as a protection, and a gather, as a fence, as a boundary, not to violate the halacha. For what reason? Ultimately, levilti asos, that by the observance of this shmir, you will not come to do mechukos atoevos, shaloti koshlu b'chaleilu, kamo tumas nida, v'zobo, v'yoledis, v'zuloson, v'shkav zochu, which is also among the Toevas that the Torah mentions, and I believe in some editions of the Sforno it's spelled out. U'v'zehoifun lo'isitamu u'bahem. What is our protection against the licentiousness of the world? We don't even have, we cannot avail ourselves any longer not of the life of the shtetl, but we were totally closed off from society. Not even of the option to gather in our own little ghettos, apart from the world. In the digital age, every barrier has become permeable. The Yetzer Hara knows no bounds. I tell my Talmidim all the time. So, I don't claim that my door was better than the door of my Talmidim. I tell them to the contrary. I believe they're far better than we were. They learned better than we did. They knew more than we did relatively at the same age. Frumer than we were at their age, in a good way. But each door has its nisyonos. And our door, if we wanted to get involved in these types of activities, so we had to get on the train and travel down to Times Square. It was an effort to get there. It wasn't always so comfortable. You might meet somebody that knew you. I knew people that happened to. So, it restrained you somewhat. I say, today, we live in a different world. You go to Times Square, and in Times Square you have Disney. And what used to be in Times Square, where is it now? It's in everybody's house. That's it. Just sit down at the computer, and it's all there. You don't have to go anyplace. You don't have no fear of anyone knowing about it. B'chayre chadorim, the Yetzirah's presence. These are his last desperate attempts to stand in our way of bringing Mashiach Tzidkenu. We are attentive that Levulti Asayis Michukos Oteh, Yishmarti, Yishmarti. The Yisoid Rabbeisai, the Yisoid of these halochas, what the Sforno was telling us is. The Rabbeinu Shel Olam created biological needs in the human being. As the Rambam writes in Shmoneh Prokim, the biological needs of the human are immutable, they cannot be changed. We would expect a person not to have a passion to kill people. And if he has such a passion, then the Torah expects him to eliminate it from his personality. It doesn't belong in a normal human personality. The challenges to us in the Inyanei Kedusha are an immutable part of the human personality. We cannot remove them. The Rambam says all we can achieve is kibush, is to control them and keep them in proper balance. We cannot eliminate the tendencies which might push us in the wrong direction. What the Rabbeinu Shel Olam has given us with these mitzvahs, Rabbi Yisai, is the ability to achieve our humanity. Whether our biological needs control us, or through the discipline of the Torah, we are master of our biological needs. And that's the Inyan of Kedusha. Kedusha means, what is the whole Sefer Kedusha, the Rambam? That all the physical urges that we have are subjected to the will of the Rabbeinu Shel Olam. And that's a very difficult process. A very difficult process. But through the mitzvah HaTorah, we achieve that discipline. Become a mensch. So this lies at the yisoid of Kedushas Yisrael, this mitzvah. And Rabbi Shalom has given us these mitzvahs for our benefit. And that's what the Sforno tells us. If we observe these mitzvahs, then all the ta'avis in the world in Inyan Kedusha will not be appealing to us. And in a world which has no sense of balance, there's something very inexplicable in today's world. And we have to see it under the lens of the Torah. We would expect, perhaps historically, the rise of this, the gaze, at a time and place when there was very strong repression for people to be involved in heterosexual relationships. So, but less brera, it would come out in some other fashion. But in the age that we lived in the last 30, 40 years, where everything is totally hefker, and one can do whatever one wants with no restraint, no matters of conscience, no matters of defamation. So why in the world do we see, at the same time, the rise of this peculiar behavior, which there would seem to be no need for in the first place? But the Ramban writes in Parshas Hazino, in Shira Hazino, the Mansvay Sarova Satzmeya, that if we indulge wantonly in the normal typhus, they will inexorably lead us even to the types of typhus such as Mishkav Zohar, which the human has no need for. But it is seeking, perhaps, to find some satisfaction in his life of cares, so he looks for more and more exotic things to capture his fancy. So with the Dafka, the Ramban tells us, in an age of cares, that we will see the manifestations that we see today. That's the age that we live in. The Rabbeinu Shel Olam placed us in this age. We cannot want and long and desire for a different one. Our lives and our Aveda are going to be played out on this stage. What the Rabbeinu Shalom wants of us is to achieve the maximum that we can in the circumstances in which He's placed us. And Be'ezus Hashem, my belief is that we will fulfill that which the Chassam Sofer tells us to achieve appropriately Kedushas Yisrael. And from that, we will be zeicha to that which he writes, that the v'shov of one and the we will see the advent of Mashiach Tzitkeinu al Admas HaKadosh B'mheira. Let me start. As I said, my thoughts are a little bit random because I try to think through when preparing for this share of what are the common issues which come up, and which with better focus we could perhaps handle better than we do. Probably, if there's one halacha that I would want to teach that would have a very positive impact on everyone that came to the share, it's the following. Now, we live in a time and place when overwhelmingly our wives are at work. There are very few stay-at-home moms today. The nature of society, the expense of our lifestyle, does not allow for it. And because of that, I have a Shiloh, which day in, day out, I have this Shiloh all the time. And I would doubt that around 50, 60 years ago, I had the Shiloh except very infrequently, and I have it all the time. And that is the issue of a Hefsek Torah. Now, the Hefsek Torah has to be made before the sun sets, before Shkia. Non-stop, I have the Shiloh. You know, I was at work, I was here, I was there, and by the time I remembered to make the Hefsek Torah, it was an hour after Shkia already. What do I do now, Rabbi? And there's no real answer to that problem. You know, certain things in life, all you could do is to make sure you don't wind up in that situation. You know, if you're hanging down from the Empire State Building by your three fingers from the 98th floor without a safety belt, it's too late to think about what you should do about it. Chochmah is not to wind up in that situation. So I came to the following idea. And I suggest that the day that a woman has to make a Hefsek Torah, when she gets up in the morning, she should do a bedika. Make an internal check. Now, you'll ask me, well, listen, ma'am, what I'm telling you is against the Shulchan Aruch. The Shulchan Aruch says that you can't do a Hefsek Torah in the morning. You have to do a Hefsek Torah in the latter part of the day. And you're absolutely right. So, on that day, she should do a Hefsek Torah in the afternoon, as she's supposed to. But what will happen if she calls me then, Rabbi, it's an hour after Shkia, what do I do now? In 99% of the cases, we'll be able to follow the fact that the Shulchan Aruch says that b'di'evad, the b'dika shachar suffices. There's one unusual case that it doesn't, so if a person has the shayla, which I don't want to go into, but a person has to call a rav to ask. Now, the cheshbon is a very simple cheshbon. A woman is a balabos when she gets up in the morning, before her day begins. Once the day begins, she's always balabos. Then, she has all her responsibilities, and it's hard to keep track of everything that's going on. So if I had one thing that I would tell everyone, is that on the day of a Hefsek Torah, you should make a bedik in the morning. About it, then you'll have to do apidin, what you're supposed to do in the afternoon. But in case you don't succeed, in 99% of the cases, the bedikah shachris will be good by the end. So this is practically yisayid number one. Now, in general, when should the Hepsik Taira be done? The Chatkil. In reality, it should be done from Plaga Mincha and on. So, an hour and a quarter's manas, you know, before Shkiyas Achama. So, it's an hour and a half, depending on the time of the year, etc. But that's approximately when it should be done. But therein lies the problem. I mean, we're talking about, you know, something which has to take place between 3:30 and 5 in the afternoon. Now, who is a bas chayrin today? You know, to have that so simply achievable. All of a sudden today they stop and they're going to disappear to take care of what they have to. So if I don't impart any other information, I taught this halacha tonight, and we'll mekayim this, then we'll do something important. Now, I'd come back perhaps a little bit later. In the harchoka from violating the Yisurei Nidun, I'm not talking about Siman Kuf Tzadik Hei now, but among the halachas that we have is in Siman Kuf Pei Tes, the halachas of Vestas. Well, we have to anticipate what the possibilities for the next cycle are. Now, part of the issue that we have is that very few women have a fixed cycle. My elders tell me that in pre-war Europe, it was the norm to have a fixed cycle. It was normal, as it was through most of history. But somewhere, leaving the old world and arriving both in America and Eretz Yisrael, it disappeared for reasons that are unknown. Ravoshna Bnei Brak, Salazan Gesund, among thousands of Shoyalim that come to him, had one person with a Vest Kavua. Every few weeks, whatever it was, every fourth week, at 10 o'clock in the morning, that's it, you know, like a Swiss watch, perfectly functioning system, but out of thousands of women, one. So we will come back to what the very days of anticipating the best is on. The truth is, it does necessitate, it would be wise to learn a little bit more broadly, because I can only highlight the main Vestas, but I cannot highlight all of them. There are additional ones in the Shulchan Aruch, some are pretty complex. Now, what are the hanhogis on a Yom HaVest? What do we have to do? Now, two things that we have to do. Now, the Chavas Das in general was pretty machmer in Hilchos Nida. So the Chavas Das wrote that on a Yom HaVest, how do we know that a person didn't see it any time during the day? Even if we do an internal check, so maybe 10 minutes later she saw. How do we know? So the Chavas Das came to a somewhat difficult idea that a woman should go around with a moch dochuk the entire day. Wear a cloth inside the entire day in a Yom HaVest. The Poskim in general are not willing to accept this because of the fact that it would be very, very harsh. Internally, it would be extremely irritating. So, instead, what the Pesachim have told us, that on a Yom HaVest, the woman has to wear levonim, white underwear. Now, we have to understand, there's a corollary to wearing them. It's not a Xeris HaKosov. You know, we don't just wear the white underwear, and then forget about it. That means at night, before she goes to sleep, she has to check the white underwear. And as Rashi writes in the Sech Shabbos and Daf Yud Gimel, the entire notion of the Levonim during the Zion Nekiyim, which was instituted by Ezra, was a form of bedik, of checking, to see that there is no bleeding going on during the days of the Zion Nekiyim. Now we have the same halachic obligation, from a different standpoint, one's the Reis and one's the Rabbonon, but to see that there's no dam on the days of the vest. So a woman has to wear white the entire day, and she has to check it at night before she goes to sleep. That's one halacha of a vest. the second halacha of a vest, that she's mechuyev to do a bedika. And the bedika should really be done near the end of the vest, in the latter part of the day. Now, even if she missed that vest, I mean, she missed the bedika, she has to do the bedika after the vest. That's, and this is especially important today, because of the fact that in the world of the Achronim talked about the fact that if a woman, the day of the vest passed, and she did not have any experience of her gosha, that she was becoming a neder, so that itself was a proof that she didn't become a neder. The only problem is that we don't know how to quantify her gosha. With her gosha, milchus neder, whatever. We're not going into what all the shittas are, but we don't know how to quantify it. And this is already a known problem of for ages already, that we don't know how to quantify it. If you ask a woman, her gosha, they don't know what we're talking about. So I think the pshat is that the symptoms are subtle enough that without being particularly attentive, we don't correlate very well what goes with what. So they happen and we miss them, we don't pick up on them. So the fact that we don't experience hargosha is no longer a proof that she didn't become a nida. Maybe she did become a nida and she just didn't realize. So therefore, whereas in earlier times, if the halacha of hargosha was a pertinent halacha, which we could relate to in practical terms, so the fact that there was no hargosha was itself a proof that she didn't become a nida. In today's world, where we had the absent that proof, so if we don't have a bedika, then what do we have to be semichan altogether? So the halacha is much more significant today than it was in earlier times of the necessity of a bedika. In general, I do not hold personally that one has to do on any yom haves more than one bedika. There are shittas, I'm well aware of there are shittas. There are two bedikas, and she did two bedikas by own abeinanis. One bedika suffices, lidaiti. It's enough. Near the end of the day. Now, if it's, now, vestas are either night vestas or day vestas. Meaning that if the last period was at night, so the prisha, the separation, will be at night. If the last one was in the daytime, the prisha will be in the daytime. So with a daytime vest, it's relatively easy to make a bedika near the end of the vest, assuming that one could find the time to do it. But it's possible. And a nighttime vest, it's often a very big problem, because when the vest ends, when the oina ends, it's the wee hours of the morning, and the person's asleep. So some have come along and decided better they should do the bedika before they go to sleep. And I'm personally happier that they should do the bedika in the morning when they get up. I'll be a better raya, because if they did it before, what happens for the next 5-6 hours? Now, we don't assume that dam comes and disappears so quickly. So once it starts to come out of the system, something of it will remain. So I'm happier that in a night vest, when they get up in the morning, whatever that is, that's when they should do it. Make the bedik. Yeah. A recommendation, and the recommendation is not mine, it's really the Chochmas Adam's recommendation. That is, when it comes to when you're a vestis, we should keep a written calendar. It's very hard to remember everything that happens, and if we don't have a written record, it's sometimes hard to trace back. The patterns can become difficult, and we don't remember. And especially there are halachas. It's a very, almost strange halacha, but it's a halacha. And that really, we have to. That's one of the reasons it's good to keep a written record. As I said, generally speaking, we can say most women nowadays have certain parameters between day X in their cycle and day Y in their cycle. They're going to have the next period. But where exactly it's going to be in that time frame, nobody knows. that we can suppose that that's, in other words, the varied, you know, time frames that we have. Once in a while, however, they do get a vest kavua. That the vest kavua, the most common ones, the most common one probably, or one of two, usually are the most common ones. Either they get a number three times in a row, the same day of the month, or the same haflogo, the same amount of interval in between the cycles. Now again, it's important that all the, to be a vest kavua, they all have to come out at night or all in the day. If it varies between night and day, it's not going to be a vest kavua. So they all have to come out in the same either day or night. Now a vest kavua, once in a while it happens. Once in a while. It's unusual, but it happens once in a while. Now after it happens, now what happens? So the halacha is that if in the next three cycles they don't have that vest, so that disappears. I don't have to observe that vest kavua anymore. Now here comes a very strange wrinkle, which is the following. It's a din in the Shulchan Aruch, that if a woman comes back to that day again, let's say she was had a vest kavua for 32 days in the daytime, 10 years later, she comes back to 32 days in the daytime, that sets off the vest kavua again. And she now has to be oiker it again. Now, it's a rather strange halacha why it should be. You're telling me that, listen, if a woman has cycles as women do today for close to 40 years' time, which is very typical, or more than 40 years in today's world, so she once had had a vest kavua when she was 21 years old of 32. And now she's 51 years old, and all of a sudden, boom, she had 30 years later, she got day 32 again. That this is, I should assume that the vest returns. It's a very odd assumption. So I asked once with Robert Feinstein about it. So he said also the svara is misnagit to the idea. In Seichel, the Lord does not seem to add up why it should be. But, he said, that's the din. The din is the din. He said he had nothing more to add other than to what, you know, we find in the Shulchan Aruch itself. He asked me if I found anything in more, you know, recent Svarim Achronim about it, which there really isn't all that much on this subject. So this is one of the reasons we need to keep a written record. Now, the major vestas are afloga, the interval, and the day of the month, the Yom HaChodesh. So those are the main ones that were principally, but as I said, there were a lot more than that. And that I don't want to get lost in all the possibilities. There are many, many possibilities. But it's a worthwhile undertaking, if we want to be mekayim the halachos properly, that we should learn through Siman Kuf Pei Tes once or twice, just to get an idea of the range of the halachos. Now, let's make the following distinction. We'll explore this a little bit. When do we have to be concerned for a vest? Meaning that we should anticipate what? According to the way it was last month, when do we have to be concerned we should anticipate in the following month? So basically, right, we have the Yom HaChodesh, according to the calendar day in the Hebrew calendar. We have the days of the interval, which we count in the following fashion, that the day of the last vest is day one, and the day of the next vest is the final day, so that's the number of days in that interval. And then you count again that the day that she had the vest, the second one, that's day one. And when we get to the same number of days, that's the day of the interval. And then we have Oina Beinus, which means the average vest which Chazal or Koveya is at 30 days. Now, all the Shitas hold, it's 31 days. So principally, Lahalocha, 30 is the Iker, and 31 is a Chumrah. That was the view of Rav Moshe Feinstein. The Chumrah is very broadly observed, at least in the Yeshivish community, of keeping 30 and 31. But I'm not preaching what Chumrah is to keep. I'm just making a note. I'm not here to preach Chumras. Chumras are a very private matter in this area between husband and wife. I do not, you know, I'm not here to preach Chumras. I feel a little bit the responsibility. When Rav Simcha Zelig, the Dayan of Riga, came to Brisk, so Rav Chaim was the Rav, Rav Chaim Soloveitchik. So Rav Chaim told him, your job is to paskin the din, not to paskin any chumras. That's your job in Brisk. I wonder at the end if the Brisker was so happy, because Rav Simcha Zelig was a phenomenal makel. And they used to ask him about it, why he's so makel. He says, what do you want me to do? He says, if I understand the din to be muti, you want me to be machmer? So, as I say, I'm not here to preach chumras. I may tell you what some of the chumras are, but I'm not here to preach any chumras. Now, broadly the halacha says the following. One could become a nida in one of two ways. One could become a nida through a period. One could become a nida through a kesem, that is no actual period. But we find a stain, which is larger than the size of a penny, on something which is makabel tumah and is white. And that is an issue, then it should become tmei. Now, just as an aside, if you find dam after urination on the toilet paper, or you see dam on the toilet, that's a time to air color off. Do not try to figure out the halacha yourself. As one of the greatest murder haros, as a chatzadik lebracha told me, he said, if you ever want to get lost in hilchas nida, he says, just get into some kuf tzadik aleph, which deals with the shaylas, and you'll never get out. It's a place that it's easy to get into, but once you get into it, your head will spin. You will never get out. So, if you have shyness in either of those two areas, either that it was, especially after urination, you find on the toilet paper, dam, or you see dam on the toilet, that's a time to call and ask the Rav. Don't try to figure out the din yourself. Your head's going to spin, and you won't get any place. Now, so broadly, if a woman becomes tmeya because of a kesem, then there's no need to observe vestas for that the next month. Now we have a quandary. What happens if on one of the times she's supposed to do a bedika because it's yom havest, she does a bedika, and voila, it's done. She's tmeya. So now what? Does she have to observe a vest the next month because of this? Or she doesn't have to. Let's say the vest doesn't come right away. The vest comes 5 days later. Who knows? So what does she do? Does she observe a vest from there? Why not? Well, let's say she didn't see it all. She just saw the dam on the bedika cloth. Does she have to observe a vest? The mashmos in the Raivit is that one has to observe a vest for such a thing. However, many of the great Rabbonim all tempered this. They all said this is to some extent, it's some measure of a chumrah. And because of that, a lot of them have their tricks up their sleeve of how far one has to go with this chumrah and where one doesn't have to go. Rabbi Yoshev Shibigazunt said, based on a Bach, a very small spot of dam is not the derech of a vest. Not the derech. She may be tmeya, but it's not the derech of a vest. It's an unusual thing. So he said, if she sees a very tiny spot, which someone I know asked him, and he said, smaller than the button that you push down on the top of a Parker pen. That's smaller than that. He said, you don't have to be choishes for vestas. I guess Rav Moshe Halberstam, Zecher Tzadik Livrocha, also about this shayla. So there's also machmer that one has to observe vestas. But he also reined it in. So he said, if the shayla, the bedikah was such, that I'm machmer, but I can imagine that there's another rov that might be meikel. Means it's not clear cut, it's totally on shikul hadas. Shikul hadas means it's subject to judgment. I see it this way, but I could imagine, and I wouldn't be appalled if I heard another rov saw it differently than I did, and paskin the other way. In such a situation, there's no din of vestas. It's only if it's clear cut that she's made. It's up in the air, even if my inclination is to be machmer in this particular shayla, then I would not say that they have to observe vestas. Now, one of the issues, there are issues, classical issues, which divide, you know, when the Gemara talked about Chachmei Bavel and Chachmei Eretz Yisrael. One of the problems that we have in our door is that we're starting to blur the lines of distinction in our Messiah. Chachmei Chutz La'aretz have had different notions and different Messiahs of Heirah and Chachmei Eretz Yisrael. Very widely divergent notions of how to paskin very childless. And it's important that we keep each Messiah where it belongs. The Messiahs of Eretz Yisrael belong in Eretz Yisrael, and the Messiahs of Chutz La'aretz belong in Chutz La'aretz. And as I tell people, this is New York City, in this country. We're not a neophyte community that just woke up in the year 2011. You know, okay, Rabbi, so we all marched into Shul tonight, we're all going to become from, now what do we do? Baruch Hashem, we were Zoicha in this city, that the world's greatest going to live there. Less man the poly, that the greatest goyim in the world lived in our city. We had, Baruch Hashem, two super giants of Hiro that lived simultaneously in this city, Rav Moshe Feinstein, Zeicher Tzadik Livracha, Rav Henkin, Zeicher Tzadik Livracha, that did not hold, you know, second place to anyone. These women for the world's greatest place, less man the poly. So we have Messiahs. And our Indian is to follow our Messiahs. What they do in Eretz Yisrael, they have their Messiahs. We're not coming to disrupt their Messiah. And we have to maintain our Messiah. Our Messiah came from someplace. It came from Bnei Yoilam. That are second to none. Mamela, that's our responsibility. There are very differences. In Eretz Yisrael, they broadly observe, for example, the Einah Beinonis is a 24-hour time of separation. It's a 24-hour owner. It's a sheet of the Balatanya, not the Balatanya, the Rav Shulchan Aruch. There's a Rish of the Balatanya. It's from the Rish of the Balatanya. Holds this way. But this is what they observe in Eretz Yisrael, broadly observe. Yes, probably Yosher, Shlit. That's what a Paskin feel. In Chutz La'aretz, and if you ask Rav Moshe Feinstein, the same Shaila, tell you, the Din, it's more Aina, it's no different than any other. It's either a daytime or a nighttime. That's the din. Everything else on top of that, we get all types of chumras that we want. But it's not a din. It's either a day or it's a night. Tremendous nafkaminas in that din. What happens, for example, even if you have, there is a chumra of the Oroz Arua, which is also in Eretz Yisrael, it's interesting. They observe this less because the Chazon Ish was not a big fan of it. And in Chutz La'aretz, among Bnei Torah, it's rather widely observed, the Chumra of the Oroz Arua. The Chumra of the Oroz Arua is that if, let's say, it's a daytime vest, and the nighttime before, they were machmer to be perish. So that was the Chumra of the Oroz Arua. So the owner before, when the anticipated vest, and so not only during, if it's a daytime, the nighttime, if it's the nighttime, the whole day before. It's a chumra of the Oroz Arua. Again, it's a chumra, I'm not telling anyone to observe the chumra, not to observe the chumra, when to observe. That's not my asik tonight. So, what happens, let's say it's a daytime vest. And the night before is the Leil HaMikvah, for example. Or the husband's traveling, he's leaving town. 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning is off to the airport for 2 weeks. So what do we do now? So in Eretz Yisrael, they're machmer in the shayla. because the Oida Beinah, this is Mitzad HaDin, is 24 hours, it includes the night. Our Messiris and Chuslaris is to be Mekel, because it's a 12 hour. There was always a Chumrah, most people, if we have any Chumrah, we should certainly say Beli Neder, meaning that we intend that Shasat Chak to be Mekel, and then we're not bound Mitzad Neder to observe it. And Rav Moshe Feinstein says that's all Paskin to be Mekel. So there are profound differences. So you have to keep that in mind. We live in an age of tremendous, tremendous confusion in this area. Tremendous confusion. We have Svarim that are written in Eretz Yisrael that are brought here, translated into English, taught here, which have no shaykhus with our Messiah. And we live in a time that's in that regard, the Rabbeinu Shalom has deemed Ki Mitzian Teitzi Sarah Dvar Hashem B'Rushalayim. The greatest doylem in the world at this time in history live in Eretz Yisrael. You know, we'll call his man that Rav Moshe Feinstein was living, the greatest goyim in the world lived in New York City. So, Mamela, new shaylas, inevitably, are addressed, you know, to the greatest doylem in the world, as it should be. But we have to be careful at the same time not to import those things which are contrary to our Messiah. We have Messiah which is rooted in Goyne Adam. We have to maintain our own Messiah. That we have to be very careful. But there's a huge era of Parshias in the last 25 years, which is not helping anyone. The Messiah in each place is both as a Hashara of Gdoyle Olam, as an Indian of Messiah, is an Indian of Hayra, of which Shitas they felt were appropriate to that particular time and place. And they felt certain things were necessary, they should be Mekel. Other places felt to be Machmer, like other Shittas. That's a Hashara of Gedolei Olam in each place. And the Stavitz Mitzad the Hashgocha also. The Hashgocha, the Rebbeinu Shalom is Hashgocha. That this place there should be Mekel in this, and this place there should be Machmer in that. And that's, for whatever reason, is most Matim for the Avodah of the people in that place. So be very, very careful not to confuse these two. I want to talk about an issue which is extremely common now, and at least the basic ideas of it we should know. So we're knowledgeable enough to ask the shyness that we have to ask. We can't necessarily always hope to be able to know all the answers to all the shyness that we have. It's a very hard task. And a lot has to do with Messiah. I went, so Rob that I know, he was a Luyish fellow. I come to him one day. And he tells me a whole cheshbon when he came to a certain psak. And I told him, yeah, it's very nice, your cheshbon. I said, but I have to tell you, I know this the easy way. He said, have a Messiah in it, that's the halacha. Kibalti, so I have a Kabbalah. Another day I came to see the same Rob. And he tells me, a chiddush of his l'chumra. So I told him, listen, I hear what you're saying, but I want to tell you one thing. That if you're going to paskin like that, you're going to be the only one in the world that paskins that way. This is because the whole world doesn't paskin like that, I can tell you. So a lot has to be, you know, there are super goyim that can cheshbon out every halacha. And the rest of us, we can learn and understand what we understand, and then we need to be zeicha to mesira too, to many, many things. So, at least we have to know what the shaylas are. And one shayla, which is really, it's relatively a new shayla, and for that reason it is not well understood. It's, you know, and that's the fact that many women that are on birth control are using the pill nowadays. Now the pill is hormonal intervention in the body's biological systems. The Rabbeinu Shalom made a wondrous mechanism. And if you study the biology of it, it's absolutely amazing. That the body has tremendous feedback mechanisms to monitor constantly the hormonal levels. So as the blood goes around and the hormones affect what goes on in the uterus, in the other parts of the female reproductive system. So as the blood goes around and goes through very parts of the brain, it monitors the hormonal levels. And it tells them either to increase the production of this hormone, to decrease it, to shut it down, to turn it on, to turn it off. It's just amazing. You know, we would have to actually do this in our terms. You know, imagine just all the times a day we'd have to go and take a blood test from a person and then run tests in a lab. And then we would have to figure out what's the next step, how we're actually going to, you know, make the next step to make the system turn on and turn off. And this is what goes on 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And this determines all the female cycles are all driven by these hormones. Now, when we introduce hormones from the outside, so we're playing around with that system. Fortunately, the world of medicine understands today approximately how to work with it. But we're dealing with very sensitive mechanisms. And all of a sudden, something which is unanticipated is arriving on the scene, and the body just doesn't know what to make of it. It's unaccounted for. You can't account for it. So was this normal, not normal? The body is not adjusted. It takes quite a while for the body to adjust to what's happening, that there should be a normal hormonal response. Now, because of that, it's very common at the beginning when one goes on the pill that there's staining issues, breakthrough, what's called breakthrough bleeding. Now, this... there are two different types of scenarios in broad terms. What are called the mini pills, that are pills that women take when they're nursing, lactating. And they take those pills because those pills only have progesterone in them and they do not have estrogen. Now the reason for that is not well understood, and I want to articulate it. And that is, it's not because the estrogen is dangerous for the baby in any regard. That's not the reason for it. The problem is that the estrogen, the presence of estrogen will shut down the lactation and the woman will lose her milk. So therefore, typically what the doctors do when a woman is nursing, they give her a pill which doesn't have estrogen. And when she stops nursing, they switch her to a pill which uses estrogen. Some doctors now, I've heard in the last year, have a kind of pshara, because they like the pills with estrogen better, and I'll explain to you why in a moment. And what they do is, once the woman has been nursing for a number of months, 4, 5, 6 months, and the nursing is well established, they're less concerned that the estrogen is going to interfere, that's in the pill, and they'll start to give estrogen pills, and they believe that it's not going to disrupt our ability to nurse. That's anushita, which has arisen. Now, in broad terms, the mini pills, according to the statistics, yes, an OBGYN to research this for me, and he came back with the following, that the nursing pill has a 32% incident of staining, and the non-nursing pill has an 8% incidence of staining. So the nursing pills are four times the issue of the non-nursing pills. So particularly, you know, when women are post-childbirth and they're going on the pill, the mini pills, so some women it's very benign, and they just, everything goes smoothly. And other women, it's from temporarily troublesome to long-term troublesome. Not that it stays a problem. If you go off it, the problem stops. But while you're on it, for some women, it just, their bodies just cannot adjust to it. And they keep constantly becoming an either through breakthrough bleeding, until they just decide to throw in the towel, and this is not the way they want to go. So these things now. Who was going to be whom? None of us know. And we don't even know from what happened last time. We are not static as human beings. We're in flux. Every day of our life, we are physiologically different than we were yesterday. So just because 3 years ago something worked one way, doesn't tell me what's going to happen today. It's a different world. Now, for that reason, there are a number of issues which are associated with being going onto the pill. What one has to be aware of, that it has its own unique set of halachas. And as I said, this we do not really have, it's not due to knowledge of this, is not widespread today, because this is, in another dur, probably, I presume it will be. Because by that time, there will be a long enough experience of enough people with it, that it will start to become part of mainstream thought. But we're still at the point in time where this is, you know, tucked away in Tshuva's form. And we're trying to take it from the Tshuva's form and to implement it L'maisa, and to find out really what's the appropriate way to implement it. So, Rav Moshe Zatzal, and the Metzius is clearly that way, because I see it, without any doubt, that, you know, there are certain... He considered the taking of the pill as the possibility of being a vestaguf, meaning that it will touch off damnitus. And by some women it does. Most of them, it's temporary. Once the body adjusts, it settles down, and they go forward. Some, they just can't creep out of it. They get tired for 2 days, breakthrough bleeding again, on and on and on, until they just give up. Because it drives them up a wall, obviously. So Rav Moshe articulated the following. That number one, and this is a little bit more liberal than Rav Moshe had suggested his maximum chumrah. If you want to know the maximum chumrah to know how much Rav Moshe was concerned about it, is Rav Moshe held that for the first month he wrote in the Tshuvas that one should be perish altogether and shouldn't be together with his wife. Now, that's most Rabbonim would feel is a chumri yisera, that's beyond the ability of the tzibur to accept. Especially, where is it going to come in? It's going to come in after childbirth, where there was already an extended prisha already beforehand. So, consequently, this is not a psak that too many responsible Rabbonim are willing to give. You know, at least, as I said, we're not coming to, we have to gauge the cholder of a door what's appropriate. Most Rabbonim do not feel that it's appropriate for the time that we live in and the challenges that we face. So, Mameila, we go to the next position. And the next position is that let's start with what's clear. What's clear is the following. That number one, a woman should wear white. This is irrespective of what she's going to do, but she should wear white for a month from the time of the Hefsek Tyre, to see if she has any unusual staining which is associated with taking the pill. Now, if she sees a stain, even if the stain is less than a penny, so over a long time I struggled with what should be done about this. Should we say there are asuras? Not asuras. So Baruch Hashem, over the last few years, I've gotten to know of Israel Orbach, of Bayit Vegan. Shlomo Zalman's son, the Edom of Rabbi Yosha, but God, a Gavra Rabba in his own right. And this is one of the shyness that I discussed with him. He gave me a very practical hatzal. He said that if she finds dam less than a penny's worth, she should do a bedika, an internal check, and then ask a shayla. If the internal check is fine, so I guess it's a simmah, she's not having a vest, and Matovim Manoim, she's Muteras. And if it's not fine, it's a simmah, she's having a vest, and she'll be Asura. So, in this first month, just as an ayim, a vest, one has to look at nighttime to check the white, starting from the day of the Hefsek Tyre, when we know she's not bleeding for other reasons. And if she finds any dam, even less than a penny, well, she has to do a bedika, and it's kashayma. That's step number one. This is clear. Step number two is that the first month is also rooted in Rav Moshe's Tshuvas, assuming one's not going to take the first chumrah that he articulated. Then one should do one bedika on any night when he's planning to be together with his wife. She should do one bedika. It doesn't have to be the last minute. It could be an hour or 2 hours before. So if they need to ask a shayla, they can ask a shayla to see that, in fact, she's not actually bleeding. And if a month goes by, a cycle goes by smoothly, that there's no unusual occurrences, so then she goes back to normal, like every woman. She doesn't have to wear colored, she doesn't have to do any bedikas, and life goes on normally. Sometimes that'll happen in a cycle, sometimes in two cycles and three cycles, but until it settles down. Now, at such time that she finishes nursing, and she's going to switch to a pill with estrogens, you have to do it again, because this is a new effect. It's a new mix and a new hormonal effect on the body, and you have to check again in this regard. Now, there were times that we have to see the whole picture. You know, as the world has an expression, sometimes you don't see the forest for the trees. I see a tree, 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 a tree. I need to take a step back and see this is not just a bunch, there's not a bunch of individual trees, there's a forest here. Now, in postpartum, and this is very, very important to keep track of, one of the things which happens in postpartum is that it takes quite a while for the menstrual cycles to return to normal in postpartum. And different women are different. The average is probably between 8 and about 13 months, an average, but that's average. There are some people that get it immediately. And it's very interesting, Chaver, who did Shimush, where Ramesha finds things, Echatadik of the Ruch, many, many years ago. So a woman came to him, and she hadn't had a vest in somewhere 16, 18 months since she gave birth, and she was a little bit alarmed. What happened? And the doctors were all urging her to use hormonal intervention to get her cycles going again. And if not, her system is never going to come to life again. And it was a Rabbanim, Choshev Rabbanim, that encouraged her, in fact, that felt that she should listen to the doctors. But she went to Rav Moshe Feinstein. And Rav Moshe Feinstein said the following, very interesting, the perspective of the Godel Hador. So the Gemara tells us that after a woman gave birth, they didn't get a vest for 24 months. He says, that's uncommon in today's world. He says, I've had a few such women who, in fact, did not get a vest for 24 months. After 24 months, the vest came back. She says, I'm not alarmed by the fact that she didn't have a vest for 16 or 18 months. He says, there are a few women whose systems still work perfectly in the world, and the world of medicine now wants to come and destroy that too. Leave them alone, they're fine. He says, I've seen it, and it's fine, and I'm not troubled by it. But because of this, what happens, and this is very, very important to know, what's in postpartum, it's very, very easy to confuse staining and a vest and a period. Because the postpartum periods do not have the same heavy flow as a regular period. They're much, much lighter. And it's very, very easy to confuse a kesa and a vest and a cycle. Normally, it's easy enough not to confuse. Kesem, we found the kesem, and that's it, a little bit of blood, and by a vest, there's a significant amount of dam. But in postpartum, that does not hold true. The vest itself, you won't have a vest, but the vest is very light. You don't have the same level, I guess the hormones are not the same, it's not the same level of development, tissue development, and therefore you don't have the same level of breakdown. In postpartum, you have to be very, very careful. If a woman starts to stain, and she stains more than a day or so, to be very start to ask shailas of what to do. I mean, I personally paskin, because I yanti into this to a very, very significant extent. You know, years back, when I was relatively new with paskin and the shailas, so I was my eye in a great deal into this issue. And that's where I realized that each day, today's a kesem, tomorrow's a kesem, the next day's a kesem, the next day's a kesem. So, you know, if we look at each one individually, well, it's a kesem, it's less than a shear, it was on color, goodbye, throw it all out. But if we take the step back and we look at the forest, what's happening? What's going on? Why is she standing today, tomorrow, the next day? What happened? The answer is that it's a light vest. That's the answer. So particularly in that situation of postpartum, when a woman sees 3 days in a row ksama, a machmer that she has to keep 5 and 7. I just, in my investigation of the metzias, of the facts on the ground, I cannot come to any other conclusion. And I know this is a new idea, but I cannot paskin otherwise. Because I cannot, I have no other way of understanding what I'm seeing, except that it's a vest. So in postpartum situations, when you start to have staining, it's a time to get a rub involved, a good rub involved. Figure out what's going on. Is this a vest? It's a sustain, it's a kesem. What is it? What's its status? Now, let me just a point, which is an important point. There are sometimes, it really stems really, you know, the Yehuda is the one that articulated this best of all. That, you know, bedikas can in fact be irritating. You know, not everyone is insides or is insensitive as others. Some people are very sensitive. Now, bedikas can be very irritating. And that could itself, irritation could cause bleeding and make shyness in its own right. So we have, you know, the Yehuda wrote already that if a woman has problems, that she's very sensitive, that she should do less bedikas. Why, he said? Because the halacha only obligates and pure obligation to do a hefsek tire, a yom aleph, and a yom zayin. Everything else are good things to do, supposed to do, but they're not absolutely chiyuvim in the din. That's why if a woman forgets in one of the middle days of a dika, as long as she managed to do one on Aleph and one on Zion, she's all right. Which is generally the reason why. So the Noda Behuda says that if she's going to have irritation, so what's the Rav going to do? The Rav's responsibility is to find a heter for her to be together with her husband, not that she should remain asur. So the Rav's going to have to undertake to find a heter for her. He says it's a lot less problematic to tell her not to do the bedikah in the first place than to find the dam and to try to articulate a heter for it. So, at times when women have issues of irritation, postpartum, some women are always sensitive, then we tell them to do less bedikah, sometimes one on Yom Aleph, one on Yom Zayin. Usually, the wisest course of action is to tell them to do in one of the middle days, like day 3 or day 4, to do one bedikah. Why? Because the halacha is that if a person did a bedikah on day 1 and then did not do the next bedikah again until day 8, so they're messed up and they have to start designing the kiyum again from day 8. Whereas if you did not have a 7-day break, if on one of the middle days you did a bedikah, even if she forgot Yom Zayin, she got busy and she forgot, so then she would be able to make a bedikah on Yom Ches and Yom Shmini and go to the mikvah that night. So at times we tell people to do fewer bedikas because they feel irritated. Now, one eitzah for this, which can assist in this significantly, is first of all to be makpid to use cotton bedikah cloths. Do not use polyester. Polyester is rougher than cotton, number one. Number two, that one can make the bedikah cloth wet and wring it out, and then use it, which makes it even softer. So that helps a lot of times to avoid problems. Now, sometimes a woman makes only one bedikah a day. So I remember very, very clearly, I was with Ramesha Halberstam, Zichatzadik, Leroch, the Dayan of Neida Charedis. So he says to me, when a woman has to do one bedikah on a day, I tell her to do that bedikah, in other words, for the Zion Nikiyam, this type of issue, I tell her to do the bedikah in the morning, not in the afternoon. He was particularly talking about Yom Shvi, but it's true, it's a wise eitz even for Yom Aleph. He says, why? He says, you look in the Shulchan Aruch, you won't find any such halacha. Doesn't say so any place. He says, it's not a halacha that's rooted in Yerodeya. It's a halacha which is rooted in Menschlichkeit. He says, the Menschlichkeit is also part of the Torah. He says, a person doesn't need to be stressed I have to go to the mikveh tonight, and I have to prepare, and I have to remember about this bedikah. He said, if they took care of the bedikah in the morning, it's one less thing for them to be stressed about. And he told me, I still remember this very clearly, and it's a good idea to know. He says, women in the day that they have to go to the mikveh, even if they're married for many years. We're all married guys, so I don't need, no explanation needed. So it's a stressful time. It's a difficult mitzvah with a great deal of responsibility. So we have to be. So that's a sensitivity to that stress. Now, because of what I mentioned to you earlier of how difficult it is in today's world with the women working to remember later in the day, so it's wise that even Yom Aleph, if they're going to do one, but you could do it in the morning. So the Hefsek Tyra is a chiyuv ultimately, as I mentioned earlier, to do with the afternoon. But the medikas yom aleph you could do in the morning too. So do it and take care of that problem. Now let me just talk a little bit about chatzitzas. So we know the halacha is that despite the fact that the only thing that is a chatzitza with a raisa, if it covers most of the body and one is makber about it, nevertheless the rabbanon will machmer if it covers most of the body and we're not makbid about it, or it covers a small part of the body and we all makbid about it, that it constitutes a chatzitza. So it comes out, if it covers a small part of the body and we're not makbid about it, that it's altogether not a chatzitza. And yet the Ramah tells us that the women are noyig, and that's the lechatchila, not even to allow such chatzitzas to exist in their body, to cleanse themselves fully. Now we have certain issues, but all of these are subject to all of these are subject to shailas. And let's go through them quickly. Let's start off with what's generally agreed upon very clearly. Casts are a problem. A person has a cast, they cannot go to the mikvah. And if it's going to be there for very long term, then go to a very great grove and ask him a shaila. There are under certain circumstances real super shasat chakaterim for this, under certain circumstances. But the norm is that anything that's not a super long term thing, that we're machmer, that a cast is a chatzitza. That's number one. Now, stitches. Now, stitches come in two types. And stitches are stitches that have to be removed, and stitches which dissolve, which you don't have to be removed. Now, I'm not always fully understanding of why this is the case, I have to be honest with you. I've struggled with it. But I'd say in life, one has to learn to that there's a Messiah, and to follow the Messiah of Hara. The Messiah of Hara differentiates between stitches which are removable and non-removable stitches. Which are dissolvable stitches. The removable stitches are a chatzitza, because they're going to be removed. And the ones which dissolve on their own, even though they rub out, but since one's never going to actually bother to take them out, so nimnu v'gomru m'gdoyle arabonim, that they don't constitute a chatzitza. So that's number one. So if one has to get stitches, certainly on an external part of the body, if one can get stitches which will dissolve but don't have to be removed, so that's certainly, especially if they're going to be there more than in a very short term, so that would be, if it's an option, is a wise option. Now, we have a broad chiluk between different types, where it takes place in the body. We have the external portions of the body, and we have internal portions of the body, like in the mouth, inside inside the ears, deep inside the ears, in the nose, so which we call Beis Astorim. There's a Shailah in the Rishonim, there's a Machlokes in the Rishonim. The Halacha states that water does not actually have to go into the Beis Astorim, into the internal orifices of the body, but it has to be Roy L'Bias Mayim. It has to be Roy that water should come there. Now, this din of Roy L'Bias Mayim, is it the Raisa Dikudin or the Rabbanan Dikudin? It's a machlokes in the Rishonim. The tea of the Peskim is lehokel, in the sense to be soimich on the shittas that it's only a din de rabbonim. And therefore we have a very significant amount of kulas dealing with problems, chatzitzas, which are in the base of Leah. Now, the most famous tshuva, this is very interesting, it's an unbelievable chiddush, that there are women that have problems with their eardrums, and that they cannot get water into their eardrums. And they will have all types of infections and all types of problems if they do. So what to do about this? Now, there are a million eitzes that you find from great Rabbanim for this. Rav Moshe Feinstein Zatzal wrote 5 tshuvas about this, that one should put an earplug, I guess deep enough in that it shouldn't really be all that visible from the outside. And that one could go to the mikveh like that. And it doesn't constitute a chatzitza. Why? He has five tshuvas of why. Now what's interesting about this, it's a revolutionary tshuva. He, in his early years, in his youth, he debated this halacha with Rav Chatzkel Abramsky. Rav Chatzkel Abramsky held that it was not acceptable, and Rav Moshe held it was acceptable. So they agreed between them, each one of them would write their tshuva, and they would send their two tshuvas together to Rav Chaim Oizer. And Rav Chaim Oizer should be machriya. And Rav Moshe was a young man at this time. Rav Chaim Oizer wrote back to Rav Moshe the following. He said, I long ago came to the psak that you came, but the reasons that you gave are far better than the reasons that I gave. It's psak. That's what Rav Chaim Oizer wrote back. Okay, so we have not only that Rav Moshe, but Rav Chaim Oizer was maskim to the psak and said he held he himself had given the psak, and that what Rav Moshe articulated in the tshuvas were much better reasons than he had given in his own, on his own fault. So this is a mahalach to deal with this problem, but this is, you know, we need a sensitivity to deal with the issue. And there are varied etzes, but if one has this problem, you need to go ask a shayla of a rov what to do and how to deal with the problem. But it's a problem that has to be dealt with. You can't ignore the problem. But by the way, you should not, one, the women should not be using, despite the fact what anyone taught them, Q-tips in their ears. And if you think you should be using Q-tips in their ears, so today is what? Today's Tuesday night. Okay, you can go to Forest Hills to Dr. Goldstein's office afterwards and ask him if he thinks he should be using Q-tips in his ears. Right. It's absolutely unacceptable from a medical standpoint to do such a thing. People do tremendous harm to their eardrums. There's no halachic necessity to do it. I mean, basically that far into the body, inside the canal, is beyond base of storm. It's considered balua and doesn't even have to be clean, so it's not relevant what's there altogether. And certainly a woman should not be doing harm to herself to prepare for the mikvah. So despite the fact what anyone taught her, she should not be doing it. Now, we have issues which are not so avoidable. And that is, we have all types of dental work. And so basically, most cheetahs held, there is one sheet otherwise, but that permanent fillings are not a chatzitza. Nimnu v'gomru. I mean, the briskas have a chumra, it's not theirs, but they adopted from others, that they hold even that permanent fillings are a chumra. But Klal Yisrael has not accepted this view. Now, what to do with all the temporary things in the mouth? And the temporary things in the mouth include, you know, temporary fillings, and stitches, and bridges, and pieces of bridge, all types of things which go on, which people need, you know, to, and in their, the strongest heter for a temporary filling really comes from the Marsham. And this really, Rabbi Yosef told us to me. Of all the things that he's seen in this entire subject, he said the Marsham was the strongest and the best. The Marsham said the following, that if the temporary filling is not larger than the permanent filling is going to be, so we said, then there's no chiv to be toivel that part of the goof, because that part of the goof will always be balua. Right now it's covered by X, subsequently it'll be covered by Y. So loilam void, it's going to be balua, that part of the goof. So Mameila, he said, there's no issue. What do I care what it's covered by? It's balua. It's now balua, will always be balua. So, I have a chaver, a very close chaver, with my chavrus in yeshiva, Avig Lamden, and he's a dentist. So I told him years back this, that he should be careful when he makes the temporary fillings, that the temporary fillings should not, if possible, should not be do enough work in cleaning them up around the sides, the extra materials, that they're not larger than the permanent fillings are going to be. If you can achieve that, that's the strongest tzad lahokal. Now, where one goes with that, well, Yosha would hold that you should leave it in 30 days, I think subsequent to the tefillah even. It should stay in another 30 days before anything is done about it. Others that are not so machmir, that has to be 30 days subsequent, 30 days in total. Ramesha Halberstam Zatatzal told me that if it would be in that, if for 7 days, it would also be meikol, but not for less than 7 days. But these are all shyness that you need to ask when there is temporary things in the mouth, which are very, very common. These are shaylas that you need to ask to know what's permissible, what's not permissible, when you can be makel, when you can't be makel. Now, in terms of chatzitzes, I just want to mention, you know, dental floss somehow became a chayiv kodesh in the world. It's not a chayiv kodesh. And for some people can use it, and for some people it's a chayiv kodesh not to use it. Tahainu. That if a person's teeth are very tight, and you put the dental floss in, and you have a tendency that some of it gets stuck in between the teeth and you can't get it out, that's a real chatzitza. And you can't go to the mikvah until you're going to go to the dentist and have them figure out how to get it out of your mouth. So if you're a person that has your teeth that tightly together, then it's a choyf kodesh not to use it. And this I heard from Rav Moshe Halberstam, Zecher Tzadik Livracha. So it's not a chiyah for anyone to do it. You want to do it, and if you're not getting pieces stuck, as matoiv manom, do what you want. But if you have a tendency for it to get stuck, then you absolutely should not be using it. Because you're going to create more problems in an attempt to remove something which is not a chatzitza. You're going to create what is a chatzitza. Just another couple of things, and with that we'll end, as I said. Per necessity, the subject is broad. All I could do is to touch a few points which in common experience are important. It's a lot of chafifa. Now we have to prepare for the mikvah, we have to bathe. Besides, it's not only the practical issue if there is a chatzitza, but there's a mitzvah chafifa. You have to prepare for the mikvah to cleanse the body. Now, it's a machloikis, it goes back to the Rishonim already. According to the Achrov, the Chofetz Chaim, the chafifa should be mibayim, preferably. Now, so if a woman has the ability to be home and to do it mibayim, that's really, you know, when she'll be relaxed, not with the kids running around, and she'll be nervous what's happening with them, but if she's able to be in a situation that she could do the chafifa mibayim, that's really ideal. Now, because of that, there's also the issue that if it's a Motzei Shabbos tefillah, that lechatchila is to do the chafif on Erev Shabbos. And Shach writes in Yoredeya, as long as this Erev Shabbos and Yom Tov will be within 2 days of the mikvah, then one should do it on Erev Shabbos or Erev Yom Tov. As long as it will be within, in other words, in next is going to come 2 days, it's Erev Yontif, and now it will be 2 days Yontif, and Motzi, the second day of Yontif, she's supposed to go to the mikvah, the Shach Paskins, that she should do the Chafifa on Erev Yontif. It's a 3 day Yontif, you have to do it even according to the Shach Motzi Yontif. And then the knowing that on Motzi Shabbos, on Motzi Yontif, they shower, but they don't have to do a lengthy, you know, preparation of the body. If they, obviously the teeth they have to clean again, and they have, usually have to comb the hair out well again, but total deal, they don't have to do again. It's just a couple of points about chafifa. Now we need to end on a positive note. What I mean by a positive note, we started off at the beginning that the separation is meant to teach us discipline, and that we should become mentioned. But ultimately the Torah's ideal is not of separation. I mean, look at Ramei Simcha in Parshas Vayishlach. Vayikan Chelkas Asoda. Yaakov Avinu buys. Look at the piece of Ramei Simcha in the Meshech Chochmah. He quotes a Zohar. And the Zohar writes the following. Listen attentively. That if in a place where husband and wife do not have marital relations with each other, the Shekhinah will not come to such a place. There's an absence of the Shekhinah. We do not believe that the physicality that the Rabbeinu Shel Olam has given us is sinful or negative. It is equally part of the service of the Rabbeinu Shel Olam. No less so than putting on tefillin. And the human relationship between husband and wife is an experience of Kedusha. In many different levels. It's Kedai Ravoisai. Learn the very Kavonos, what the Ravid writes in the beginning of the Bali HaNefesh, on Nizin Yonam. And I will point out merely two aspects. At least one part, perhaps more than one, is rooted in the Ravid itself. The Torah wrote, V'dovak b'ishto, that the Dveikus comes, in fact, being ish l'ishto, is a result of the physical relationship. Ron Kotler, the Tzar, wrote this. And the Yisoid, the Rebbe Shlomo gave us this as the Yisoid of marriage, to draw two people together, that we should in fact be a family and be an appropriate unit and have the proper Ava and Achva between us. The Rebbe Shlomo gave us with Messiah. That's number one. In that sense, it is a profoundly important experience, and one, in fact, that achieves of the highest ideals that the Rebbe Shlomo wants us to achieve in this world. The second thing is, and we have to know what's our madrega. The madregas of the Tanoim that were beyond the physical world. And Mamela, their relationship to the physical was on a different plane than us. And we can't concern ourselves with their sphere of Avodah, because it has nothing to do with our sphere of Avodah. The Vilna Gaon was in this world, but the Vilna Gaon was a Malach Elokim. The Vilna Gaon lived in, when he was in this world, it was three quarters in the next world already. So Mamela, the things which possessed human beings to be involved with were little child's games for the Vilna Gaon. This was nothing to be concerned about. This was a place that you were, you did, but there's nothing in the physical world which was overly significant. And why? Because he saw the Shechina so clearly in front of him. He saw the Rebbeinu Shel Olam to such an extent that the physical world was a pale place. We don't, our sphere of Avodah is not that. Rav said that we owe two notes of thanks to our wives, irrespective of what else goes on in our life. And Rav did not have the best of wives, the Gemara tells us, in various places in Shas. He did not have the best of wives. But he said two things he owes her. That they raise my children, she raises my children, and she matzilos oisa menachet. She keeps me away from violating the Inyanei Kedusha. If a person doesn't have a wife, who knows what they're going to do in this world. Now, if we derive it right, that one of the kavonas toivas that we should have in Zivug, and that's appropriate for Adar, is that we should find this particular expression in our life, beheter and not beisra. And why I find it particularly, after a great deal of thought, why I find it appropriate for Adar, we live in an age, Rabbi Yisai, where the world around us has an effect. We're possessed by Taiva. To some extent, that's the society that we live in, one cannot escape it. In our madrega, we need a kavono which does not, in fact, run counter to that, but to the contrary, elevates that. The kavonos of the Tanoim that were beyond Olam Hazeh, we cannot relate to them. It's not the door that we're in, it's not the Metzius that we are. But this kavana of the Ravid we can relate to. Is that because, why? Because it does not run counter in any way to the physical experience of Zivug. To the contrary, that the maximum that a person will experience in Zivug is such that thereby will make it less likely that it will be Nuchshel and Chet. So if our kavana, in fact, is our indulgence in Zivug, is besides the kavona of, as I mentioned before, of Dveikus Beishto, is for the purpose that through achieving, finding what we want, finding satisfaction, beheter, will make it less likely that we'll be nichshol be'isa. So that's something that we could comfortably live with, because we don't have to transcend ourselves. It's channeling where we are and what we're about, and saying that we wish to experience this experience within the confines that the Rabbeinu Shel Olam has allowed us to. So that chalila, that we should not experience, have we desire to fulfill, to seek fulfillment outside the bounds that the Rabbeinu Shel Olam allows. So the Ravitz Kavona Rabbi Yisai is achievable. We're all possessed with some measure of Yirah Shamayim. So we don't want to be nichshel. And we're aware, we're not little children. We're mature enough and sophisticated enough about life and people to know how easy it is for people to be nichshel. So Mameila, this kavon of the Raiver that we should experience, this profound experience in life, in a very pleasurable fashion, so that we should not come to be nichshel v'chet, is one of the kavonas taibas that the Raiver tells us in Bali HaNefesh, that's matim, which is compatible with the door that we're in. So, we seek to achieve, to master ourselves, to achieve discipline over ourselves, to be mekayim the Rabbeinu Shel Olam's halachos, and that our involvement, in fact, in this sphere could also be in a measure of Hashem Shemayim too, in two ways that I've outlined for you. Good evening, Rabbi Yisrael. We'll daven Marav, and after Marav, we'll say after Pitul Tilov, Rabbi Yosha.